God has really blessed me. You know, he let me work in D.C., let me work with EIB in Hollywood, in Silicon Valley. And he's shown me through all those experiences that there is one problem and one solution, and that's why we do this show.
Welcome to A Disciple's View with Todd Herman.
When the God of the universe created the world, he didn't snap his fingers or wink his eye. The Lord spoke. God said, "Let there be light." Because we believe, we speak about the happenings in this world as we remain mindful and hopeful and happy that our true home is with Jesus Christ and his kingdom. I'm Todd Herman. Welcome to A Disciple's View. In the third segment of the program today, when we do the personal notes, I will be apologizing for the choice of language I used yesterday in retelling a story, recounting it. My friend and I alone in the front room of his father's house, as my friend had learned that his dad had been one of the soldiers who stormed the beaches of Germany on D-Day. And we shouldn't have done it, but we got the man to tell us the story. And he had decided his whole life to not tell his son that he was a World War II veteran. People are affected by war in different ways. And that man that night decided to share with us. And so I'll tell you, I'll do the apology later because we got some complaints about that. And I loathe disappointing you. You know, when God intervened to give me the opportunity to work here, it was clearly an act of God. And I don't take that lightly. I'll explain, because it was a fascinating thing. Every time I tell that story, something happens to me. And so I'll take you inside the decision-making there. And by the way, you can always comment here. Comments at AFR.net. That will go to the programming team, the folks who are given the responsibility of stewarding the network and leadership, and they'll share that the positive, the suggestive, the negative, all that. And I look, we're here to please God first, and you a very close second to that. And because we're listener supported, you have a great deal of clout. You really do. And the management team here takes your satisfaction with this network as serious as anything. So we'll get to that. And I actually look forward to that conversation, because I'm touched that people, I'm touched to work at a network where people care that much about some words. So we'll get to that. If you are not watching what's going on in Los Angeles in the mayoral race, I would suggest that you are missing a fascinating cultural moment. And Andrew Breitbart, the late political strategist and media entrepreneur, and if you don't know Andrew's history, he was really responsible for driving the Drudge Report up when the Drudge Report mattered. And then he started the Breitbart series of sites, Big Government, Big Media, etc. And Andrew died too young. He was a ball of fire in terms of energy. He was a guy, I met him once in Washington, D.C., gave him my card. He called me at midnight that night, excited to talk more about the revolution. And Andrew Breitbart had said that politics swims downstream from culture. So culture swims upstream. He's right. And the culture moment going on in Los Angeles is so fascinating, because Spencer Pratt is of L.A. He's from the business. He has a degree in political science. He's a reluctance hero, which is the single story arc that Disney movies accept, or at least they used to. Joseph Campbell, a media theorist and guy who studied story in cultures all around the world, story arcs and character types. He described it as the hero's journey. And to this day, to my understanding, it's what Disney will approve for stories. There's a book that makes that case called The Writer's Journey by a former Disney script doctor. So, perfect story. He's a reluctant hero. He was drug into this race because they allowed his house to burn down. And he's offering up some solutions. And he's speaking some core truths. And some of the core truths are that the so-called homeless people in Los Angeles, yes, they lack homes, but they don't lack beds to sleep in. There's beds for everybody. The same thing is true in Seattle. They don't want the beds. Some of the beds come with places that have rules. Like, no, you cannot give yourself IV fentanyl in the lobby. And no, you can't engage in trafficking yourself or others in the lobby or in your room. Other shelters have no barriers. A lot of them were bussed in by non-government organizations to pad their income. He's spoken these truths. He gave Los Angeles a choice that I thought was such an incredible cultural moment. He took a pressure washer and some templates down to Skid Row, where the streets are filth. And he took these templates and he put them on the filthy concrete and he pressure washed them so that when the concrete got clean, you see the phrase, "What if the streets were clean?" Spencer Pratt for mayor. He released an ad where people were hiding who they were. Men talking in the backyard. "Well, I'm not mega or anything, but Los Angeles is kind of a mess." Another man, "Well, I'm not mega, but yeah, crime's really up." It's a fascinating cultural moment. And his opponents have this to offer. More free stuff for addicts. The government should force taxpayers to underwrite teeth replacement for addicts. So Fox LA reported on Spencer Pratt's claims that the same people giving out needles to addicts in LA are also giving out drugs.
In the streets, she is giving these people needles with our tax money. We are stopping that. We're not giving needles and tourniquets and alcohol wipes. And I'm pretty sure a story's coming out. I've assumed it, but this could be breaking news. I think some arrests are coming where the same people that are giving needles are also giving drugs. So not only are the people that we're giving our tax money to give these poor addicts the needles, they're also giving them the drugs. So we're going to stop this. There's no more of this. And they go, "Oh, how are you going to do it?" We're just going to enforce the laws like every other functioning city. I don't know what Mayor Bass and I don't know what's going on here, but we have a lot of laws that make it so all these things people are doing, they're not going to do it anymore.
Praise God. It's a fascinating culture moment because there's people saying, "You can't do that. That means you hate the homeless." Oh, an update. Christopher Barrett Johnson, a 42-year-old Culver City resident who works for the nonprofit People Assisting the Homeless, that's PATH, P-A-T-H, which distributes syringes to drug users at LA's MacArthur Park and elsewhere, was arrested today on federal criminal complaint charging him with possession of intent to distribute fentanyl. On May 5, law enforcement pulled Johnson over near MacArthur Park after he abruptly made a U-turn in front of them in his BMW. LAPD officers saw methamphetamine in a plastic baggie in plain view in Johnson's car. Additional searches of Johnson's person and his BMW resulted in the seizure of at least 142 grams of fentanyl and nearly 46 grams of methamphetamine. If convicted, Johnson faces a mandatory minimum sentence of 5 years in federal prison and a maximum of 40 years. His initial appearance is expected tomorrow afternoon at the Roybal Federal Building in DTLA, downtown LA. Residents and businesses in MacArthur Park elsewhere have long complained about the wisdom of distributing syringes to homeless drug addicts where law-abiding citizens live and work. I'm here to tell you this happens constantly because getting them more addicted to drugs means more needles, means more money. And there are people in Los Angeles who think it's your job to get people high. Otherwise, you're cruel. So I think Spencer Pratt, in a city that had any common sense left, any godliness left in their hearts, he would walk away with this 90% to 10. Well, unless they cheat. But of course, we've got the safest, most secure elections in the world. Maybe. James O'Keefe with O'Keefe Media. revealed a widespread vote-buying ring in San Antonio, Texas. Here's a phone conversation one of his undercover journalists exposed in Texas.
I've got three Democrats, three Republicans, and the rest are Democrats.
Okay.
So how much money are we talking? Because just so you'll know, when you do things like this for votes, mm-hmm. you're talking between $5 to $8 per vote. I'm just letting you know. Mm-hmm. So you have an idea, and I'm going to bring $3,500 to the plate.
Okay.
County wide. Mm-hmm. So I know what I'm bringing to the plate county wide. So that's like $28,000.
Okay. So the woman you're hearing there is named Raquel Rodriguez, and she's a consultant for the GOP House candidate Mauro Garza. That can't be right. GOP. This is her sharing how judges have come to her wanting in on the grift.
So between you and me, mm-hmm. I've got four judges that are calling me right now. This is what they're asking me. And they're like, we want to be a part of this group. So if we pay you $3,500 each, mm-hmm. that's like 12 grand, dude. So those three judges that mm-hmm. I'm talking about, and that's Renee Yonta, Nicole Garza, right? They're paying me $3,500 me $3,500 mm-hmm. to make sure that their name is on the ballot.
Now, you could say she's a consultant, and she is, and she's talking about dollars per vote. And by the way, that's common math in Washington, D.C. How much is it going to cost us per vote? It's not common to go out and pay the voters. But in the separate country of Washington State, for instance, you can sell ballots. You could change where your vote counts without moving. So if you live in downtown Seattle, you can decide, I want my vote to count in the 8th district outside of Seattle. Mail-in voting, mail-in ballots with no signature verification is ripe for this. Here's another undercover journalist, again, the O'Keefe Media Project. Another undercover journalist recorded Rodriguez haggling for prices on votes.
How much could the city council raise cost?
I gave you my total.
It's in there?
It's $5,000 a month for me,
yep.
$8,000 for Tom.
Yep, $8,000 a month.
$8,000 for our two.
How many
services?
Months will it go through?
Seven.
$56,000?
Probably.
That's
and then 2 months, and 2 months of early voting. Six. 2 months of early voting is, my fee goes from $5,000 to $7,000.
Cash.
That's for a mayoral election or a judicial election. $50,000 to be a judge. Man, that's a lot of wanting to be a judge. James O'Keefe shared another recording of Rodriguez deliberating on price over a Senate race.
When we asked about buying votes for U.S. Senate candidate MJ Hagar and candidate Biden, here's what she had to say.
We're looking at top of ticket to get votes for Hagar, Biden. How many votes do you think you can deliver for us?
At least 5,000.
And what are we looking at as far as how much that's going to cost?
For the entire team that I'm looking at, $55,000.
So $55,000 for 5,000 votes, top of the ticket, Hagar, Biden.
If not more, I'm not going to overpromise because remember, we're 16 days till election day. You can give me cash, you can do whatever you want to do.
$55,000 upfront, 5,000 votes.
That's right.
Cash.
Cash. Yeah, I'm getting the Biden vote out, but I mean, I'm not going to do it for free. In other words, if they don't pay me, I'm like, excuse me, I don't. That's another worry I don't have to worry about.
When mail-in ballots don't require signature verification, don't require address verification, when you can pick up piles of them in cities like Seattle and Portland, Los Angeles, when people can register their home address as the county administration building, you think these things aren't sold and bought? So Spencer Pratt's a great cultural moment. He's offering insanely common sense ideas like, hey, let's not let non-governmental organizations use taxpayer dollars to give people fentanyl. And he may not win. And it may not be because of cheating. It might be purely because of spiritual capture. Speaking of that, let's talk about fake Jesus when we continue. I'm Todd Herman. This is The Disciples View. Welcome back to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. We'll get to next segment, The Tower Babbling, and a personal note, wherein I will be apologizing for some choice of words I made yesterday. We're recounting a discussion I had when I was, 16 or 17, in the front room of an apartment upstairs in the valley in Spokane, Washington, with a guy whose older father had adopted my friend Rob and had hidden the fact that he was a World War II veteran. And not just that, but that he had been among the men who jumped out of the boats on D-Day. And he reluctantly told us the story. And I, to this day, regret having asked him. And I don't know what moved him that day to actually tell the story, but he did. And it might be because he'd had a few drinks and is relaxed. But something happens to me when I retell the story. That stuck with me so heavily because of his choice of words. Not the word for which I'm going to apologize using, but his focus. I've ruminated on it forever because he wasn't focused on the bombs, the explosions, or even the death. He was focused on something else. And I've come to believe it was a method of mental survival. And so we'll talk about that, and I'll issue that apology. Just some listeners were disappointed in me, and I don't like disappointing you, particularly in this network that's so focused on pleasing God first. And the listeners are right. So we'll get to that. You saw the results of the primaries. President Trump's team is very excited that he's had 100% wins so far in terms of endorsements. Of course, he went after Thomas Massey, and Massey's out. He endorsed Ken Paxton over John Cornyn. Cornyn is out. Bizarrely enough, President Trump is continuing to endorse people like Lindsey Graham. And at this point, I've understood that he intends to do everything he can to see that John Thune does not win. That's good news. Because John Thune, if you're a Trump fan and like his agenda, understand that that he's been being kneecapped by Thune in every way possible. On the Ken Paxton-John Cornyn race, it wasn't even close. And John Cornyn is a guy who gives lip service to conservative values, who is not conservative. He has evident hatred for President Trump. He tries to hide that during elections where the president's endorsement matters. He was involved in kneecapping the president on the SAVE Act. My friend Julie Barrett has been studying the digital ID, does not like the SAVE Act. She thinks it's a backdoor way into the digital ID. I hope not. We have to find a way to secure elections. I won't be signing up for the digital ID or using it because it's an on-ramp to the mark of the beast. So that's a hard no from me, maybe for you as well. But now it's Ken Paxton versus a guy named James Tallarico. So we have the AG of Texas who has verifiable conservative action that he's taken, such as he has sued the pharmaceutical companies for lying about gender mutilation surgeries, and he has won. Well, not the pharmaceutical companies. He won against a children's hospital, a settlement, a massive settlement that'll probably get more massive because now this so-called children's hospital will be forced to build a free, they're going to have to pay for a clinic that's going to help people do what they call detransitioning. One can't transition. No one can become the opposite sex, but they can do some things to try to give these young people their bodies back. In many cases, it's impossible. They also have to give the government $10 million for lying and harming people, and hopefully some of that will go to the victims. He has that. He has sued to clean up the voter rolls. Ken Paxton has. He's done a lot in that regard. The Bush family dynasty attempted to take him out. They succeeded in impeaching him because they knew he was going to run for the Senate against John Cornyn. John Cornyn's part of the club. You don't run against part of the club. You have to be a member of the club to join. If you're not a member, you don't get to join. Only members get to join the club. No, I'm not misspeaking. That's how exclusive it is. And if you didn't watch the trial, it was the most enormous clown show I've ever seen in my life. They had no evidence of the felonies they charged him with. And when I'm saying, I'm not saying that their evidence was non-persuasive or it was circumstantial. I'm saying they didn't have any. They didn't have any direct witnesses. And I didn't really think I was going to talk about this today, but I was moved to talk about it because of something Tallarico just said. I'd intended to talk about something else, and maybe we'll get that tomorrow. But something Tallarico just said. During this this trial, they actually brought in the chief witness. And the people defending Paxton asked him, did you ever see Paxton do this? No. Were you in the room? No. Do you have any emails from him showing he did this? No. Do you have any documents showing that he did this? No. I mean, people were laughing. So James Jimmy Tallarico posted the mugshot of Ken Paxton because this is what the Bush family dynasty wanted to do to him. So he could have a mugshot. And oddly, the endorsement of President Trump, who at whom the deep state threw every possible form of lawfare, every possible form. Somehow, that didn't stick against President Trump. The alleged rape or sexual assault for which he was found liable, sexual assault, nearly everybody who studied that knows it was made up. Knows that the woman who made this complaint was a fan of President Trump after he supposedly sexually assaulted her. Her favorite TV show was The Apprentice. She never made a contemporaneous statement in this regard. The lawsuit was bankrolled by people who hate Trump. The attempt to steal his business, pretending that he lied about the value of Mar-a-Lago when Goldman Sachs, who backed the deal, did the deal with him, liked the deal. No one was hurt. There was no victim anywhere. They tried to steal his business. They tried to steal his entire wealth portfolio. They did the same to Ken Paxton, and they're shocked that it didn't work. So they're running against Ken Paxton, the attorney general. The Democrats are running a guy who is a false teacher. Now, this is where we sit. The Republican Party, the Bush dynasty, the Romney dynasty, the McCain dynasty, the John Thunes of the world, tried to take Paxton out. And the Democrats bring in a guy who decided to go to Bible school so he could say he's a Bible scholar. He has been speaking in public for 30 years. He's a single man who's never married. So the campaign put out a statement about what a ladies' man he was in high school. And in fact, some of his social media channels turned out to be following some sex-oriented accounts featuring scantily clad women. And there's a big belief that they did that so he could come along and go, whoops, sorry, I really like women. It's his false teaching that concerns me. The Democrats have taken a guy who has been speaking in public for almost 30 years, and only in the past five has he begun talking about Jesus. Now, you could say maybe he had a Damascus Road experience. The Lord can use anybody. Maybe, in fact, God has come to him and said, hey, I am Jesus whom you've been persecuting. Maybe he had the same experience that many of us has had, is getting to an older age and realizing, wait, we're not just empty bodies. We have souls. But that's not, there's no evidence of that. James Jimmy Tallarico just said that nowhere in the Bible, let me get the exact quote as I understand it. This is what I understand he said. Not once in the entire Bible does Jesus ask us to worship him. All he asks is that we follow him. Love like he loved, love the outcast, welcome the stranger. Let's start with this. Is that all Jesus asked? Love like he loved? No. Jesus made commands. All power on heaven and earth has been granted to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey all I command. For I will be with you even until the end of the age. So he didn't just say, love as I love. He didn't just say, love the outcast. He said, love your enemy. Love your neighbor. But more to the point about this, where Tallarico is claiming that the Lord Jesus never said to worship him. Jesus said, he was asked, Rabbi, of all the commandments, which is the greatest? And the Lord Jesus said, love the Lord your God with your entire heart, mind, soul, and strength. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments, all the others hang. What was the first one again? Love the Lord your God with your entire heart, mind, soul, and strength. Do you think that would involve worship? Jesus worshiped God the Father in word and deed, in prayer. The disciples asked him, how should we pray? You should pray like this. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. That's worship. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. That's worship. Give us this day our daily bread. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For yours is the kingdom and glory forever and ever. Amen. That's worship. Oh, but he was worshiping the Father. Well, Jesus, in five words, demonstrates the utter, filthy, false teaching lie of James Jimmy Tallarico. The Democrats have chosen, on purpose, a youngish-looking white dude. The media calls a Bible scholar who had spoken in public for 30 years and only recently began speaking about Jesus. This man has yet to utter a truth about Jesus. Because when he speaks truth about Jesus, he's speaking a partial truth. He is merchandising a false Jesus, a counterfeit Jesus. And if you believe in the counterfeit Jesus, you are not saved. If you do not know the Lord, you are not saved. But Lord, didn't we perform many great deeds in your name and miracles? And didn't we cast out demons in your name? And Jesus said, I never knew you. Go away from me, evildoers. I never knew you. If you're worshiping a false Jesus, he doesn't know you because you don't know him. So James Jimmy Tallarico says that Jesus never told us to worship him. Okay, Jesus said the first and the most important commandment, love the Lord your God with your entire heart, mind, soul, and strength. Worship him. Then Jesus said, remarkably, from John 8:5-8, Jesus said, before Abraham was, I am. Five words. Oh, he used bad grammar. Nope. No, he did not. He communicated the fact that he's self-existent. Before time was measured or even before time was even a concept, he was. Although he said, I am. Was his past tense. There's no past tense to Jesus because there's no past, because there was no beginning, because everything is one time, because he is that great. He is God. He spoke this to the Pharisees and they knew exactly what he meant and they were astonished. They decided to try to stone him because it was a crime to liken yourself to God. That's what Jesus did. Before Abraham was, I am. And if you go look at the raw Greek, and I'm no expert in this, far from it, the Apostle Paul was referring to a two-word phrase, and I'll probably butcher the second word, ego, eimi, I am. So the Pharisees knew what he was saying. They knew he was referencing Exodus 3:14, I am that I am. Say this to the people of Israel, I am has sent me to you. I am that I am. Five words that describe the nature of God. Jesus Christ said, I am the Father are one. If you have seen me, you have seen the Father. Do you not know that I'm in the Father and he's in me? James Jimmy Tallarico, a false teacher, propped up by the Democrats, should tell you the spiritual state of their party. The Republican establishment lying about Ken Paxton, defaming him, taking false witness to the point of an impeachment trial, which was laughed out of the chamber, should tell you about the spiritual state of the shiny-shoed Republicans. Jesus said, I am the bread of life. Jesus said, I am the light of the world. Jesus said, I am the gate for the sheep. Jesus said, I am the good shepherd. Jesus said, I am the resurrection and the life. Jesus said, I am the vine. And Jesus in John 14, 6 said, I am the truth. Pardon me, he said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. He told us he was and is God, and he told us to love the Lord our God with our entire heart, mind, soul, and strength, and he taught us how to pray to the Lord, and he told us to go and make disciples because he commanded us to, because he's God with all power and authority. They're running a false teacher for the Senate in the state of Texas. That's the spiritual state. We'll come back on A Disciple's View. Appreciate you listening to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. Get to the Tower of Babbling. And a personal note here, an apology to some listeners who were disappointed in my word usage yesterday, word choices, and kind enough to reach out. And I'll clarify what happened. Without repeating the words, I'll give you a kind of a description of what I said and why. And man, there's some conversations. Maybe, I don't know if you're this way. But there are conversations that change a person. And particularly at that young age, I think I was 16 or 17. I'd just begun driving. But I was probably 16, in fact, because Rob had just begun driving, and we were about the same age. Just formative. So we'll get to that. Quickly, love this. It must be my day to be wrong about things, or my week, or my minute, because people do get stuff wrong. Kathy writes me from Orange Grove, Texas. Todd, I'm writing regarding Ken Paxton's hoax impeachment. You're partially correct in your assessment. It was the Bush dynasty pushing the impeachment, but it was not for Cornyn. Ken Paxton beat George P. Bush in a landslide for Texas AG. That's when the impeachment started. I stand corrected. You're exactly right. Exactly right. My apologies. I guess the greater point stands. It was the Bush, Romney, McCain dynasty. Wait, it's George P. Bush's turn. And Kathy continues her note. And let's be clear, Ken Paxton did not win because of President Trump's endorsement. He would have won without it. Real Texans have been fed up with Cornyn for the last 6 years. Sincerely, Kathy, Orange Grove, Texas. That makes me happy that it didn't require President Trump's endorsement. Because Cornyn has been a guy who pretends to care about Americans and the Constitution, and it's just rank. And you can hate the SAVE Act. I have friends of mine who are absolutely patriotic, God-fearing Americans who do not want the SAVE Act passed because they feel it's an onboarding for the digital ID. I don't see that. I'm quite aware of the fact that people like Josh Hawley are hungry for the digital ID. He is absolutely obsessed with it. I know that because Josh Hawley wants you to have to give your passport or driver's license information to any company that makes an operating system, so you can use computers. Well, I mean, they're not forcing you to do it. It's just if you want to use a computer, then you have to do it. So I'm not blind to the excesses and the errors of the Republican Party by a long shot. Even people like Josh Hawley, who is right on 99% of things, just horribly wrong on that. One cleanup item here before we get to the Tower Babbling. One of the largest raw dairy farms in America was told to lie on their cheese label by the FDA. This is from the Grounded Wellness podcast.
So what the FDA wanted was for you to pasteurize your cheese and label it as raw.
And we refuse to lie to our consumers. This says raw cheddar cheese. On the back, it says, to achieve optimal flavor, we heat the milk to 158 degrees.
Which is pasteurization.
Let's not just pick on Organic Valley. Everybody else is doing it too. They couldn't conduct a mandatory recall. Do you know why? They didn't have causation. Tens of thousands of pounds of cheese destroyed. They were completely negative for E. coli. Clearly, the FDA is not connected to consumers, and I don't serve the FDA. I serve people. Excuse me for being emotional, but it's that deep.
And you can see it, and I'm obsessed with this, and I think we may discuss this at a greater length on Friday, because I'm obsessed with this man's response. He's breaking up into tears over this. So your FDA wants him to lie to you. That's the state of things about foods that God designed for us. The attack on the food supply. It is for real. I was just having a conversation with some friends of mine about the tick-borne illness. That there's a massive, I was just reading about a 1,700% increase in this condition that makes it impossible for you to consume or to digest meat. Nicholas Holcher's reporting it's probably 10,000% increase. It's the alpha-gal syndrome that people can catch through the Lone Star tick. And Bill Gates spent $7.6 million developing a GMO tick designed to spread in the wild. There is a scientific paper. I'd be happy for you. If you sign up for my show notes at thetoddhermanshow.com or thetoddhermanshow.substack.com, you get links to articles like this, including a scientific paper, peer-reviewed, that said scientists have a moral obligation to infect you with that syndrome so you can't digest red meat or dairy. That made it through peer review. Your government distributed radioactive ticks around the country. Your Department of Defense. Do I think they're doing this? Yeah. I think all the patterns line up. But it's not proof. I don't want to bear false witness. But the patterns line up. On this program, we thank the Lord for placing supposedly wise people like Bill Gates on tall towers of shaking sand with our feature called The Tower of Babylon.
You know about the biblical truth of the Tower of Babel. A Disciple's View presents The Tower of Babylon.
My son only tried to rob you, and you took his life. That was an abuse of force, Channing. You must pay for this.
Three sound bites in today's Tower Babbling, starting here with a woman who for, about 40 years has been busily pretending that her husband is not an unrepentant abuser of women. Hillary Clinton says every Republican woman is a handmaiden to the patriarchy, except Lisa Murkowski and Liz Cheney.
What advice do you have for the first female president of the United States?
Well, first of all, don't be a handmaiden to the patriarchy, which kind of eliminates every woman on the other side of the aisle, except for very few.
Lisa Murkowski. Liz Cheney.
Yeah, there's a few.
The fact is that your party decided to not give Kamala Harris the first run, but to pick a decrepit, mentally compromised, probably senile old man named Joe Biden to run. And you guys lined up behind him to pretend he was mentally Superman. But yes, 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 the handmaidens of the patriarchy. Thank you, Hillary. Second soundbite in today's Tower Babbling. The mayor of Los Angeles, Karen Bass, is openly willing to destroy LA's elections.
Councilmember Hugo Soto Martinez, who has endorsed you, he wants to explore ways to let non-citizens vote in city elections. I know that there are some cities that already do this, but you know, politics is all about timing. With Donald Trump in the White House, is this the right time for Los Angeles to go down this path?
Well, I think we need to explore it. Now, I've not seen exactly what he's calling for. I have a little familiarity of what happens in other cities.
we should explore letting people who aren't allowed to vote, vote. Cool. Well, that seems about right for Los Angeles, the way Karen Bass is running it. But then again, Spencer Pratt, he's so extreme. Did you know? And I don't want to freak you out or alarm you, but did you know Spencer Pratt wants to put water in the fire reservoirs? Fascism. Last soundbite in today's Tower Babbling. When she was asked about businesses that are leaving Seattle because of her attack on businesses, the 43-year-old mayor of Seattle, Katie Wilson, who is enjoying her first ever paid employment, though she's still on a $500 per month stipend from her family, Katie Wilson asked about businesses leaving. She said, well, bye. When she took over as mayor for her first ever paid job, as mayor, by the way, she has exactly one direct report, her chief of staff, that's it. She's no one else's direct boss. One of her first acts as mayor was to encourage boycotting Starbucks, who has since begun the process of moving their corporate headquarters to Nashville. Now, Seattle's mayor is walking back her comments against Amazon, Starbucks, and Microsoft.
So again, I'm really excited about this partnership. And I mean, just to give another example, right, today we announced a second large new shelter site, Tiny House Village, that that we're working on. And that is with a philanthropic partnership from Challenge Seattle. So that includes money from Starbucks, from T-Mobile, from Microsoft, from John Stanton and Terry Gillespie. And so really grateful for their partnership.
She's now glad-handing the same organizations to whom she said, well, bye. Oh, by the way, the shelters they're building, low to no barrier. You can sex traffic there, take fentanyl to your heart's content, because that's Seattle. And that's a wrap for today's Tower Babbling.
That was the Tower of Babbling.
Well, I'm sick and tired of smart guys.
On A Disciple's View.
On a personal note, I owe an apology to some listeners who I offended. Maybe said a better way, I disappointed. I was telling a story yesterday in respect for Memorial Day. And I often tell the story of Memorial Day. Sometimes I tell it around the bombing of Pearl Harbor, the anniversary or recognition of that. About a friend of mine who had learned that his dad had been a World War II veteran, because his dad never told him that. His name was Rob, and he was going through, they'd moved. He was just putting stuff away. And he just wondered, hey, what's in this box? I don't know where to put this. And opened it, and there was letters his dad was exchanging with his friends who survived storming the beaches on D-Day. And Rob never did learn which beach, just that his dad did that. Photos, medals, is it the DD214 discharge papers? And he learned that his adopted father, who adopted Rob when he was an infant, served in combat on the beaches, maybe at Normandy, but definitely in D-Day. And man, we always wanted to get him to talk about it. And so yesterday, I quoted his dad. And his dad, in retelling a story of getting off the boat, the landing craft. They jumped into the water, and he remarked at how cold it was, and the bombs were coming in. And he told us, I didn't mention this yesterday, but he told us they could feel the heat from the explosions in the water. And someone yelled, incoming, and he reached over and pulled his friend into the water. And they went down as deep as they could and felt the concussion and the heat and the light. And then he came up out of the water, cause just keep moving forward, just get to the beach. And he tried to pull his friend up from the water. But his friend's head was gone. And then his father said, and boys, the water was so stinking cold. It was just so stinking cold. He didn't say stinking, and he didn't say dang. But he said a word close to dang twice. And so I said the word that he said twice on this network. And so to the people that hurt, because this is a, we're to be in the world and not of it. And to the people that hurt and disappointed, I'm sorry. You're right. Even quoting my friend's dad, those words should not have left my mouth. I apologize to you, and I hope that you'll give me grace and forgive me. When I tell that story, I'm back in the room. I remember where I was seated. I remember where Rob was seated. I remember what Harry was wearing. I remember the color of the chair and the alcohol he was drinking. He wasn't drunk, but it had enough to share with us. Memorial Day is so hard for guys like that. I remember my friend Steve. We'd been out shooting on his property at a really safe gun range. My daughter was out shooting my 9mm and the tactical shotgun and an old-fashioned 22, and then my M4 carbine that a friend of mine built, who was a combat veteran in Iraq. He built this for me. And I'd asked Steve, I said, what's this button here, this release, this slow release on my rifle? I'm sorry to be an idiot. I just don't know what this is. And Steve said, yeah, that's your, And he stopped talking and he put his hand on his head and he leaned up against a tree. He said, that's your silent release. Cause sometimes you just don't want people to hear you. And I said, Steve, I'm so sorry. He goes, no, that's fine. You just, sometimes when you're shooting, you just don't, you know, can't let people hear you. And I'm sorry to Steve. I didn't know what I was asking. I'm sorry to you. I apologize for letting those words leave my mouth, and made a commitment to Jonathan, the PD here, that I don't ever want that to happen again. So thanks for your grace, forgiveness. Thanks for commenting. And remember, you can send notes directly. They go to the team who will forward them to me. It's comments@afr.net. And so God grants us permission to speak again together. May his peace wash over you. On behalf of Randy and AFR, I'm Todd Herman. And this has been a Disciples View.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.